We have now arrived at Ecclesiastes chapter 3, which opens with the main idea: to everything there is a season, time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die. So please contain your excitement. Maybe this is the chapter that you've been waiting for. It has the words that Pete Seeger turned into lyrics for a song in the late 50s, apparently with the intention of drawing attention to the need for world peace, because he does add a final line, not found in the chapter, with the words, "A time for peace, I swear it's not too late." The song was then reworked and made very popular by the Byrds in 1965, who scored a number one hit with it, at a time when anti-war sentiment was a strong theme in popular music. We will now, at the beginning, dismiss with such notions. This is not an anti-war chapter, where the preacher is trying to create some kind of righteous discontent to urge us to world peace, whatever that means. We, on the other hand, are going to explore these verses with confidence at arriving at a proper interpretation and application of the meaning, because we're going to read these verses in their context. And we will see that in the verses following verse 8, the preacher himself will show us how we are to read those lines, and he will show us how to interpret them and how to apply them. And when we do that, we will be strengthened by them. Now, you already know, at this point in the series, you already know that the preacher has been treating us with some very strong theological chemotherapy. He's been giving us some very strong doses of reality in order to treat disease of the soul. And what he's been doing is that he has been telling us the truth about life in this world. And life in this world is a very hard toiling against the thorns and the thistles. And they are the thorns and thistles of a broken world filled with all kinds of perplexing and frustrating gaps and holes and deficiencies. He told us the truth that for all of our sweaty toil, with all of those unavoidable risks and all that unavoidable fatigue and injury, after all of that, everything that we might manage to pull up out of the tilled dust, why, it'll all be confiscated when we die. Life is hard, he has told us. In a world that we cannot repair, and with stuff that we don't get to keep. And no matter how wise or foolish, no matter how rich or poor, no matter how hard working we are or lazy we are, we all meet up with the wall that only has one gate. But don't misunderstand the preacher when he says that he learned to hate life. Don't misunderstand him when he says he learned to hate his labor in which he toiled under the sun. We heard him say that in chapter 2. He's not becoming suicidal. He's not becoming hopelessly despondent when he honestly looks at the vapor-like quality of his life or his work. Don't misunderstand him. What he's doing is that he is explaining how he learned to manage his hate and his love in a godly way. Vapors and shadows and passing images, he has discovered, none of those things are worthy to be the masters that he is to love or that we are to love or to serve or to be devoted to. So when he says that he learned to hate life under the sun and he learned to hate the toiling, he was telling us that he had learned to quit loving it. He had learned to quit being devoted to it as if it would last forever and as if those things would give him a forever happiness. He was telling us that he learned to place his highest affections and his highest devotion and his highest loyalty somewhere else other than his money. Somewhere else other than his accomplishments. Why, he even learned to place his highest devotion and his highest love upon something other than even his own life. Now, maybe you're interested in doing the same. I hope that you are interested in doing the same. Maybe you already know what it means to serve another master who can save you through the gate. Maybe you are interested in serving a master who can ferry you across the river. And so maybe you're also interested in finding out how the preacher here came to the point where he wasn't suicidal and he wasn't depressed, but he was actually learning how to enjoy his life, as brief as it was and as hard as it was. He had learned to find a place of contentment with a brief and hard life that would end with all of his pockets being emptied. Maybe you're interested in finding out how he arrived at that point. Well, he did learn how to find contentment in this here and now life. And that's what he's about to tell you. Maybe you're interested in hearing what he has to say. Well, let's listen in. Let's listen in. Beginning at verse 1. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. I know that some of you like to be occupied with jigsaw puzzles. And it comes in a box that has a picture. So you know exactly what the goal is. You have a very clear understanding of the meaning of the puzzle. You know that all of the pieces are going to fit together eventually in a way that makes sense to you. There it is, on the table, and you have the box, and you have the picture, you know what the meaning is, and you have complete management over it. Do you want to move that piece to this piece? Fine, you do it. Do you want to set these pieces aside to work on them later because you're going to work on these pieces first? That's fine, you do it. Is it going to be the border first, or is it going to be the part that has all of the same colors in it? You decide. You do it. Do you need to take a break from it because it gets difficult? So you do it. You take a moment and you walk away from it. You take as much time as you need. Easy enough. You'll get back to that puzzle when you're good and ready. Yes, you will admit as you're working on it, yeah, these questions come up as you're working on it. There are gaps. There are brief, perplexing mysteries. But you're not bothered by that at all because over here to the side, you have the box. You have the overall picture. It's right there in plain view before you. And it's the same picture that it was when you bought it. The entire history of the world is like a puzzle, and your particular life is like a large jigsaw puzzle. And if there was a box of the puzzle of your life and it had a picture on it, it would be Ecclesiastes 3, the first 8 verses. That's the picture on the box of your life. This puzzle is the complete puzzle of your life. It's from beginning to end. It is from the time of your birth to the time of your death. But we notice as we read the verses, the first 8 verses, that this puzzle isn't just the borders. It has everything in between. It has all of the planting. And it has all of the harvesting, all of the killing and the healing and all of the breaking down and all of the building up over the course of your entire life from birth to death. You'll notice that this puzzle has within it all of the pieces of weeping, and it has all of the pieces of laughing and mourning and dancing. Perhaps as you survey these puzzle pieces, you're already beginning to notice that there are extremes. And perhaps you're already beginning to notice that there are opposites. To weep and to laugh, those are very different pieces. The time of building and the time of breaking down, those are very different times. Grieving and dancing, they may not be anywhere near each other, but they are both in the puzzle. There are opposites and there are extremes and there's everything in between in this puzzle, which is your life. Now, do you think, or have you been living as if the secret to lasting happiness and the secret to a forever contentment will be found when you can finally put this whole puzzle of your life together in a way that makes sense to you and in a way where all of the perplexities are removed and in a way where all of your questions are answered? Well, take another look at the puzzle. And you'll notice that the picture is constantly changing. At first, the picture is of a baby, but babies change and grow. Take another look at the picture. It's one of constant movement and constant change and constant motion. It moves from planting to harvesting, and certainly it would move back to planting again. It has embracing, but then it changes to refraining from embracing, likely to be replaced with another new time of embracing. There's the movement of gain to loss, and then certainly it would move back to gain again. Why? It's as if this entire puzzle is a puzzle of passing shadows. Can you see this in the puzzle? It would seem like the whole thing is made up of these passing shadows. Here's one that springs up and it grows strong and it moves around to the other side of the tree and then it begins to fade. And then before you know it, it's gone, only for that to be replaced by something else that's a shadow, something else that's a passing image. And it grows and it's strong and then it too fades and it's also gone. It's constantly changing. And as it changes, you can always be certain, or you can't always be certain if it's a change from good to bad. I mean, which is better, to keep or to throw away? Well, I don't know. It depends. And sometimes you're not going to be able to tell if that was good or bad, or which is better, to keep or to throw away, to build or to break down. Which is better, which is good, and which is evil? You look at this puzzle and you might try to live as if you can find a safe conclusion under the sun, but look at the puzzle and you can't find it. Look at the pieces. You cannot find here any safe conclusion. You can't find any stable or unchanging or final understandable picture because the picture that was brief. And now it's been replaced by a new picture. And the new picture may be very different in some very important ways. So then, if you take an honest look at the puzzle, you'll have to begin to humbly admit that with all of this movement and all of this motion and all of this change, that there may never be a point when all of the pieces finally fit together. We may have to begin to humbly admit that this is a puzzle that will fade and disappear like a passing shadow, and some of those gaps will never be filled in. And some of those perplexing questions will never be answered. But nevertheless, it is your puzzle. And these are the pieces of your life, and you're trying to work on it. You're trying to be responsible with it, to assemble it as you can in a meaningful way. Do you think, or have you been living your life as if the secret to lasting happiness and a forever contentment and the secret to a good night's rest will be finally found when you can finally put this whole puzzle of your life together in a way that makes sense to you and in a way where all of the pieces finally comfortably fit together and when all of your perplexing questions are answered? Do you think that's the secret to contentment? Now, before you answer that question, there's one more thing to be said about the puzzle. Take another look. Maybe you've already noticed it. With some of these pieces, you'll notice that you may have a very real and free choice to pick up one or another, or at least you might have some kind of influence picking up this piece or moving that one. But take another honest look at the puzzle. And you will see that you can't really control it. Did you decide when to be born? Do you know the moment of your death? We remember the Lord's words. Can you extend any amount of worry and anxiety and extend your life even by a moment? The time to plant is in the spring, but does spring answer your call to emerge from its winter hibernation? Summer and fall are the time to harvest. But do you command the rain to fall? Is it scheduled on your day planner to weep only at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon so that the rest of your week is freed up only for dancing and laughing? Have you ever lost something and it wasn't because you wanted to lose it? Have you ever gained something and you weren't even trying to gain it and then only to lose it? Life's puzzle pieces of keeping and throwing away. Life's puzzle pieces of tearing and sewing. Was it all by your scheduling? Was it all by your wise decree? And then our puzzle bumps up against other puzzles. And there's the motion and there's the change and there's the movement of love followed by hate, followed by love again. War and peace and war again and peace again on the international stage and even privately in your own heart. Was all of that by your choice and on your schedule? Has all of the heart healing and all of the heartbreak come by your design and in a way that fit with your schedule? Who among us has ever planned disappointment? Who among us has perfectly controlled all of the seasons of our lives? But this is your puzzle. But there seems to be powers and forces beyond our control that are constantly moving the pieces around and sometimes putting the pieces together and sometimes just ripping the pieces apart, and you can't do anything about it. And you know what? It was so nice, wasn't it? It was so nice when those pieces were together. And it hurt to have those pieces ripped apart, despite all of your efforts to hold them together. You remember what it was like, don't you? It was a time of peace, and it was a time of laughing, and it was a time of embracing, and it was a time of gain. And you wake up one morning, and before the day is done, all of the pieces have come completely apart. Sometimes there's a very nice piece on the table, and oh, you love that piece. And then it just gets swept to the floor, and you have no power to pick it back up again. And then you look, and there's a new piece, and you've never seen that piece before, and you have no idea where it came from, but now it's thrown into the mix, and it becomes your responsibility to deal with it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your life. This is your life under the sun, Ecclesiastes 3, verses 1 through 8. Perhaps you would now also humbly admit that you would like some help in interpreting and applying these verses. Well, let's listen as the preacher continues here in verses 9 through 13. You'll listen carefully and you'll hear him interpreting and applying. Beginning at verse 9, "What profit has the worker from that in which he labors? I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He, that is God, He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, He has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of his labor. It is the gift of God." Well, here is the truth about the puzzle of your life. Here is the truth about all of the pieces, and here's the truth about all of the movement and all of the change. Here's the truth about all of the fulfilled plans and all of the disappointments. Here's the truth about all of the happiness and all of the grief. And first of all, we notice, first of all, there is the truth. But you already knew this, didn't you? First of all, here's the truth of no lasting profit. That's the first truth that you need to hold on to and remember. There's no lasting profit, gain or advantage in your toiling under the sun. What profit, he asks, what profit or advantage has the worker from all of this planting and harvesting that he can carry with him through the gate and that will ferry him across the dark river? It's a rhetorical question, isn't it? Where's the profit, the preacher asks. The worker plants and he harvests. He kills and he heals. He breaks down and he builds up. And for all of his toiling in this here and now life, why, he only ends up right back to where he started. The preacher knows this is true because he knows what the task is that God has given to all the children of Adam. And you remember what the task is. In the sweat of your face, you shall eat bread. Till what? Till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken. For dust you are, and to dust you shall return. The sun and the wind and the waters and all of us, we have a starting point at the time of birth, and we will all weep. And we will all laugh, and we will all mourn, and we will all dance, but the wall of reality is still there at the unavoidable end. We will cast away, and we will gather together, and we will have times of embracing and times of refraining, but none of that makes death anxious. Because for all of the change and for all of the movement and all of the happiness and all of the sadness, we all have a final appointment that we can't get out of. We're all born into a broken world. We're all born into a deficient world where we toil away with the thorns and the thistles and with sweat on our face and with calluses on our hands. And we gain, and then we lose, and we keep, and we throw away, and we tear apart, and we sew together, and we speak, and we hold our tongue. And still, after all of that, our pockets are emptied when we step from this shore. What's the profit? What's the gain? What's the advantage, the preacher asks? That's a rhetorical question. one that he's already answered in this book. But it's helpful to think about that when we think about all the pieces of the puzzle of our life. We will all arrive at that final gate bearing the scars of love and hate and of war and peace. And your scars may be numerous and your scars may be very deep. But the question about lasting profit still has the obvious answer. There was for us a time to be born, and after all of the coming and going of all of these other times and matters, the final time, the final matter under the sun for all of us, well, it will be a time to die. To pass through that gate where all of our pockets will be emptied from our toiling under the sun. But then you'll notice that you need to follow that first truth with this next truth. It was all by God's sovereign and perfect plan and arrangement. God made it all beautiful in its time. God made it all beautiful in its time. Now, what exactly did God make and put into His own proper time? The time of your birth. What did God make beautiful and put into its proper time? The time of your death. The time of planting, the time of harvesting, even the seasons of weeping and laughing God sovereignly decreed. From your perspective, when you look at all of the puzzle pieces of your life, it might seem to you at times that it's all just a big mess. Looks to you like nothing is fitting together. But when God looks upon all of the pieces and when He looks upon all of the seasons of your life, He sees the beauty of a wise and a powerful and a just and a good and a merciful upholding and disposing and governing of everything in your life, from the greatest to the smallest of all of the times and all of the matters of your life. God says, it's beautiful. The picture of this puzzle is constantly changing. Sometimes a very nice piece that you like very much is swept to the floor. Sometimes some of the pieces fit and sometimes a lot of them don't. And sometimes a piece of weeping and mourning and losing is put into the mix. So what should you do? Just become depressed? Should you become hopelessly despondent? Should you just want to try to quit? No. The fruit of the Spirit is self-control. And so then in those times, you pray for the Spirit's help and you control yourself to remember and to believe this truth. God made it all beautiful in its time. Well, which times? All of them. God made it beautiful. God did it all right. God is decreed in Himself from all eternity by the most wise and holy counsel of His own will, freely and unchangeably, all things whatsoever comes to pass. And then you remember and you believe the truth that God not only decrees, that He not only has a plan, but He always brings His plan to pass. And so we remember the truth. God, the good creator of all things, in His infinite power and in His infinite wisdom, He upholds and He directs and He disposes and He governs all of His creatures, and He disposes and governs everything from the greatest even to the least, by His most wise and holy providence. And He does all of that for the end to which they were created. God made it all beautiful in its time. God looks upon the pieces of your life decreed by Him and provided to you in His evaluation of it all. It's beautiful. It's right. He says that all the times of your life have been and will all be perfectly, beautifully, sovereignly timed. But then you'll notice in our text, you'll notice that then you need to remember and humbly submit to this next truth, that you cannot understand all of God's plan. You have eternity in your heart, says the preacher. This means you have the capacity to think outside of yourself, and you have the capacity to think about the future, and you have the capacity to think about the big meaning of everything. What is the meaning for now, and what is the meaning or the purpose for eternity when God brings these pieces into your life, or when He removes a piece from the puzzle of your life? What's the big picture, and how does it all fit together? You have a natural capacity to contemplate these things, and you have a natural craving for it. You have eternity. You have forever in your soul. It's a part of what it means to bear the image of God. To know that there is an ultimate purpose, and to know that there's an ultimate plan that's working for an ultimate goal. Except, the preacher tells us, except that you do not have the wisdom to fully grasp the wisdom of God. Except you do not have the goodness to fully understand the goodness of God. You accept that you do not have the vision to see all that God sees. Especially when life is difficult. Especially when all the pieces, they all seem jumbled and out of place. And contentment is hard to find, especially in those times. You must remember that God's wise and holy decree, and God's wise and holy and powerful and just and good and powerful providential arrangement of all of the pieces of your life, that His decree and His providence, they are too high and they are too magnificent and they are too glorious and they are too perfect for you to wrap your understanding completely around it. You can't see all that God sees, and you can't know what God knows. But when the matters of life don't make sense to you, you do have this promise. You do have this promise. Therefore, take these three truths and apply them to yourself. Take the truth that there's no lasting profit or gain. And take the truth that everything is by God's sovereign arrangement. And take the truth that you can't wrap your mind around God's sovereign arrangement. Take these three truths and apply them to yourself, not to curl up in a ball over in the corner, and not to try to check out, but in order to walk through the seasons of life under the sun in a proper way. In other words, remember and believe God's word that there's no lasting profit or gain or advantage from your earthly toil that you can take with you across the dark river. But the coming and the going of all of the different matters of life are not meaningless, because they are all beautifully, perfectly, wisely, sovereignly arranged by a God who is good and who is merciful and who brings His wisdom to pass with almighty power. You naturally know in your heart of hearts that there is a forever, that there is an eternity and a purpose that transcends you or this earth or any of the particular matters of your life. But you also know that That sovereign plan and that providence is of such a high and such a wise, it is of such a glorious arrangement, and it is of such a beauty, and it is of such a wisdom that you cannot search out the work of God that He does from the beginning to the end. And then you apply those truths and you find them to be your guide to learn to enjoy your food and to learn to enjoy your drink and to learn to enjoy the good fruits of your labor. And you take those truths and you learn to find life itself as a gift from God. Here, you have just been given the truth to quit anxiously working your fingers to the bone to try and find lasting happiness or lasting contentment from any of these temporary possessions or from any of these temporary circumstances. You know what's happening here? You are being liberated by the truth to no longer bow yourself before temporary things and instead to see them all as very wise provisions for your good and for God's glory. Yes, we look at the picture and life is in constant motion, sometimes from one extreme to another. But you are being liberated from trying to make sense of it all. You're being freed from that. You can't. Now, we are responsible where we need to be responsible, and we pursue wisdom as we should. But we're being liberated from thinking that we are to find our contentment because we finally figure out how all of the pieces fit together. We're being freed from that. You can't wrap your mind around the wisdom of God and His arrangement, but that's okay because God sees the whole picture. That's okay because the whole picture is of His design. That's okay because He's good. We are learning to quit trying to find lasting happiness, and we're learning to quit trying to find lasting contentment among things that don't stay and among things that are beyond our power to control and among things that are beyond our power to keep. It is not good to chase after the pleasures and treasures under the sun as if they will last forever. It is not good to just sink down into the unbelief of worry and anxiety as if the world or your life is just a jumbled up mix of random meaningless pieces. It is not good to try and plant your happiness and contentment in a perfect understanding of why God has arranged things as He has, because you'll never have that understanding. It is good, the preacher says. It is good, therefore, to use the good things that God provides and to use them with thankfulness and to use them with rejoicing in your heart. It is good to receive whatever God has ordained. And it is good to respond to Him with your own faith and your own repentance and your own obedience and your own endurance in trusting His gospel promises. So we have all these puzzle pieces, and we have the truth here to interpret them and to apply so that we may walk properly through all of the seasons of life. And so now you are ready to understand, and I hope now you are ready to make the confession of verses 14 and 15 your own sincere confession. Let's listen in. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it that men should fear before Him. That which is has already been, and what is to be has already been, and God requires an account of what is past. This is where the preacher has been guiding us, that we may come before the Lord and that we may have this very same confession of faith upon our own lips. The preacher discovered how to have lasting contentment even in this brief and hard life, and it wouldn't be found in his earthly pleasures, would it be? Learned how to find peace of soul. He learned how to find and to hold on to tranquility of soul. And he knew, he discovered it wouldn't be in any of his earthly treasures. Although he could enjoy them for as long as he had them. Contentment wouldn't be found by somehow being able to see and to understand how all of the pieces of life are working together in a way that made perfect sense to him. Contentment and peace of soul cannot be found by having all of our questions answered. But you already know the reason why. It's because the world is broken. There are many questions that just simply will never have any satisfying answers. This world and this life, it's cratered. It's cratered with gaps and deficiencies and perplexing troubles. And those perplexing troubles and mysteries in the unfolding of your life will not be resolved to the satisfaction of your wisdom. Therefore, we are being liberated. Therefore, we are being set free to serve a higher master. We are being set free to be devoted to a greater treasure. I know, oh, the treasure, it's so shiny, isn't it? Having all of the answers. It looks so shiny. You want to wrap your arms around it. This perfect understanding of why everything is going on the way it is and how all of this jumbled mess is ultimately fitting together for your good and God's glory. That treasure, oh, it seems so shiny. But you are being set free to put your heart upon a higher treasure, a greater treasure, a more lasting treasure. Therefore, may we always have this confession of verses 14 and 15. May we always have this confession of faith in our mouths proceeding from sincere hearts, that the work of God stands forever. God, and isn't this so wonderful that we can confess this? That God does not toil with sweat on His face, only to return to where He started. Isn't it glorious that we can confess this? Our toil crumbles. God's work is what? It is forever. God has made everything beautiful in its own time. Everything beautiful in its own time. Living and dying, planting and reaping, killing and healing, breaking down and building up. God says, it's beautiful. Weeping and laughing, mourning and dancing have all been beautifully, perfectly, sovereignly arranged for not just a sovereign purpose, but an undefeatable sovereign purpose. God's work stands forever. You know what that is? That right there is the true pillow that you can put your weary head on tonight. God's work stands forever. God's work stands forever. The decree of God cannot be added to because there's no deficiency in it. I know how you feel sometimes. It's the same way that I feel sometimes. But I need to practice self-control. And I need to remember what is true. That God has arranged all of the seasons of my life in a way that is as beautiful as He is beautiful. That is as perfect and is as right as He is perfect and right. And nothing can be added to it because there's no deficiency that needs to be filled in. His decree is all that it should be. His providence is all that it should be. Nothing can be removed from His decree because there's no greater power than God that would come and rob Him of anything. What God does stands forever because God Himself stands forever. God's work is beautiful because God is beautiful. Now, ponder this deeply for a moment. This will be a strength to your soul. Burkhoff says it this way. The decrees are an internal manifestation and exercise of the divine attributes. God, as God is perfect, so are all His works. They rise above any suspicion that we might have that His works are flawed. In other words, as God is perfectly wise, so is His decree, which proceeds from and is a manifestation of His wisdom. And as God's decree is perfectly wise, so is His providence, which is a manifestation of His decree. Dear saints, behold, in the hard and perplexing puzzle of your life, behold the work of a good and a wise and a powerful and a just and merciful God who cannot be comprehended, but who can be trusted. So fear Him. So fear Him. Lay down your complaints. And lay down your suspicions. And offer to God a reverential and a worshipful submission. Dear saints, to doubt the wisdom or to doubt the goodness or to doubt the mercy of the arrangement of the puzzle pieces of your life, let us be honest about it, it is to doubt God Himself, whether He is wise or whether He is good or whether He is just or whether He is merciful. To complain or to be bitter against the arrangement of the seasons and the matters of your life, it is to complain and to be bitter against God Himself. To doubt that your life is as it should be under God's arrangement is to cast suspicion on His perfections. You know what we're confessing here? When we say that His work stands and it can't be added to and it can't be taken away from, what we're confessing is this: whatever my God ordains is right. Whatever my God ordains is right. And it is as right as God is right. His work cannot be improved. His work cannot be diminished any more than God Himself in all of His perfections can be improved or diminished. And so this confession of verse 14 is the expression of agreement with God that whatever He has ordained and whatever He has provided, it is as right and it is as good as He is right and He is good. And that confession proceeds from a heart that looks to Him and looks to His promises for lasting contentment and lasting tranquility of soul, even in the middle of a trouble-filled life. And finally, we notice that this confession agrees with the truth of God's righteous judgment. Literally, it says that God seeks, or that God searches out the things that have been and the things that will be. Everything will eventually come before Him. And we must also confess that as well, as we find our contentment in Him and not in the circumstances of this world or our lives. You know, I can hear someone saying, after hearing this sermon, I can hear someone saying, well, but what about all of the horrible things? What about all of the horrible atrocities in history? If God is all powerful and if God is all good, then why isn't He, with all power and with all goodness, stopping evil and atrocities and sufferings? To which I think this would be the preacher's reply. Well, just because you can't understand His wisdom doesn't mean He isn't wise. And just because you're not good enough to understand His goodness doesn't mean He isn't good. And just because you can't see accountability with your limited creaturely vision doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Do not be unsettled. Do not be destabilized. Do not be moved into despair. When you look at the puzzle of life and you see the pieces where the righteous suffer and the wicked flourish, do not be destabilized by that. Do not be unsettled. Instead, confess the truth that although you can't search it out, although you cannot comprehend it, yet you know the truth that God's justice will prevail. You've got all kinds of questions about the history of mankind, and you've got all kinds of perplexing questions about things of your own life. And how many times have you cried out, "Oh Lord, oh Lord, oh Lord, why this and why now? Why this weeping? Why this pain? Why this loss? Why this breaking down? Why this war? Why this loss of things?" But we come back to the truth. We come back to the truth that God's work stands forever and that God's justice will prevail. This is the true pillow that you can rest your weary head on tonight. Here it is. God's work stands forever, and His work is in every way most holy, most wise, most loving. It is in every way most gracious. It is in every way most merciful. It is in every way most long-suffering, most abundant in goodness and truth. And all of His work is in every way most just. So, dear saints in the Lord, the work of God for you through Christ, it stands forever. It stands forever. We read together, for as the heavens are high above the earth. You know what that means? That means it's beyond your comprehension. You can't measure that. You can't study that out from beginning to end, how high the heavens are above the earth. Well, in the same way, so great is His mercy towards those who fear Him. It is beyond your comprehension. Not just the arrangement of all the matters and seasons of your life, but His mercy to you in Christ. It is so high. It is so magnificent. It is so great. It is so glorious that you cannot understand it. You can touch pieces of it, but you cannot wrap your mind around it because it is so good. It is so perfect. The work of God stands forever. Let us confess that as we remember the work of Christ for us. His work stands forever. And we notice in Psalm 103 that this great declaration of truth And praise is given in the context of the removal of our sins and transgressions from us. His work stands forever. Yes, the puzzle pieces are ripped apart sometimes, but we remember that we have pity. We have His pity. He pities us. He looks upon us with a tenderness and with a compassion that is so high and is so perfect and is so great and is so glorious that we can't even begin to wrap our minds around it. But He assures us that we have His pity, as a father pities his children. And this declaration of praise and truth of His mercy towards us that goes beyond what we can understand, you'll notice it's also given in a context where there's a rehearsal of our frailty. God knows our frame. He knows that we are dust. He knows that our days are like grass. He knows that we are like a flower of the field. We flourish. And we look at all of our accomplishments and we look at our trophy cases. But it all passes. The wind passes over it and we are gone. And the place where we were remembers us no more. God knows all of this. God knows how passing this life is for us. He knows how brief and hard it is for us. God knows better than we do the changing nature of this picture of our life. But there is something that is from everlasting to everlasting. There's something that is unchanging, and that is His mercy on those who fear Him. The work of God stands forever. So when you're right in the middle, and you are right in the middle, and you will be until the day you die, in the middle of all of the swirling of verses 1 through 8 and all of the change and all of the highs and all of the lows and all of the in-betweens of verses 1 through 8, when you're trying to find some kind of purchase, some kind of place to stand upon, remember that you have been liberated from trying to find it there. You've been set free from that. Trying to find some kind of lasting treasure among all of these things of verses. You've been set free, you've been liberated to have your vision elsewhere, to have your vision filled with treasure that lasts. Treasure that is being confessed here in verses 14 and 15. This is heavenly treasure. The work of God stands forever, and we recall His work to us through Christ. We recall His mercy to us through Christ. We recall His pity to us through Christ, applied to us in the working of His Holy Spirit. And therefore, we say, no matter what the season is, no matter what the season is, we say, bless the Lord, O my soul.